and welcome to Very Amusing, your one-stop shop for the stories, secrets, and shenanigans of a popcorn-fueled theme park journalist. I'm Carly Wiesel, and the voice is getting there. It's getting there. It's probably going to take 2 months, all said and done, which frankly is unacceptable, but I only have myself to blame. I didn't cut back on caffeine. I did not go on vocal rest. There was a point when we were in Colorado on vacation over the holiday, and I was just with my family, and I was like, Pearl, come here. Pearl, are you listening? Look at me so I know you're listening. And then I was like, oh, of course my voice is still gone, because all I'm doing is speaking out loud all day. Not just speaking out loud for my job professionally, but speaking out loud personally as my other job as a parent. So yeah, the voice is, it's coming back a little. I can't get all the way up. But I think we're getting there. We're really getting somewhere. And I feel more and more like myself. I'm still hoarse. I don't know what's happening. I don't want to go on medication for it. I don't want to take a steroid. I don't know if you've ever taken a steroid for medicine, but oh my gosh, you'll never feel more alive. I don't want to touch how great it feels. Like, I got it once when, okay, this is not even what we were going to talk about at the start of the show, but here we go. I got it once because I went on vacation to China in December 2019. I'll let you do that math. I'll let you do that math in your head. And I came home and was the sickest I've ever been. Wonder why. And then I went to like the clinic and everywhere. And they were like, we don't know what's wrong with you. And I was so sick for a full week, and then it went away. And then it didn't entirely go away. So then I was given a steroid by my ENT, and I got the steroid and like, wow, I've never felt more awake and alive. It was like when you have, if you've ever had like 3 coffees in a day and all the lights are a little brighter and everything feels just a little like, ah, like everything feels amazing. And then it went away and I was like, oh, I've like tasted the sun. Like I can't go back. I can't know what that's like. So I'm scared to go on a steroid again because I was just so awake and just like refreshed. And I don't want to tempt fate with it again. So we're just going to barrel through. And we're going to see if my voice comes back. But I have enough vocal energy in me this week and always to yap about Disneyland Handcrafted, which I am beyond thrilled that I'm able to do an episode about. Huge thanks to Disney for letting me be a part of this, for letting me go to the premiere, which we're going to talk about, for letting me speak to the Leslie Iwerks, who you will hear from later on in this episode. Truly, Leslie worked so hard. I just, from knowing her work and from knowing her process, like, I knew that she put a lot into these. But witnessing Disneyland Handcrafted with a bunch of people in a theater who had never seen it before, myself also, it was like, how much time did this take? I can't even wrap my head around the level of effort and execution and dedication that she brings to everything she does. And I'm so grateful that this exists and will continue to exist for years, because truthfully, I'm really getting into the podcast and it's just the intro, but I'm just going to get it off my chest. Truthfully, like, we are 70 years out from when Disneyland was first made, and it already feels so disconnected from the fact that this is something people built with their hands, It is something I don't appreciate regularly. I just take it for granted that Disneyland exists because it's existed for my entire lifetime. And I'm so grateful that this piece of artwork in this documentary will stand the test of time, and that 30, 40, 50 years from now, people can watch this on their like holographic glasses, whatever sort of Jetson stuff they're getting into to view media, and really remember that like this place did not exist and now it does. And it has informed all of culture throughout, like, truly our state, our country, and the entire world. So I can't wait to bring this episode to you to talk to you all about truly these stories, secrets, and shenanigans of going to this premiere. And I had popcorn because popcorn was available. Stick around. Last thing I want to tell you. If you are listening to this right when it comes out, as you know, we have our MEI Mouse Fan Travel segments letting you know discounts throughout the episode. This week and probably next week, they're going to be longer than usual. It is a long segment, especially the first one, because this is wave season, which means that there are so many discounts. And I didn't want to cut anything out because I wanted to make sure you knew everything, because like, they're kind of like limited time offers. Like once they're filled up, and I want to make sure you know everything you need to know if you want to take advantage of them. So make sure to listen to that if you are thinking about planning anything. And then in like a week or two, I'm going to cut it down and make it a little shorter so you don't have to listen to the full, it's like 5 minutes long. But again, so many deals. Okay, love you. See you on the other side. Bye. Happy New Year, Becky!
Happy New Year, Carly. Can you believe it's 2026? I cannot. We usually expect Disney to drop a couple of offers the first of the year, and they've come up with a couple of really unique offers. Let's start with the first one. It is get 2 free nights and 2 theme park days for free if you book a 4 day or a 4 night or 4 day or longer package, right? So if you book 4 nights, 4 days, you get 2 free nights and 2 free theme park tickets. So you have a 6-night stay and 6 nights of theme parks, which is incredible. This is valid for arrivals from May 26th to September 15th. So we're looking at summer here. Is it has to be booked by February 15th and then it goes away. Another one that they've come up with, if you don't need tickets, because there's people out there who are pass holders or whatever, and you just need rooms, they have save up to 30% on rooms. And that's from May 1st to, believe it or not, October 4th. If you're a Florida resident, you can save up to 35%. And if you're a pass holder, you can save up to 40% on
No.
rooms, but that's May 1st to July 29th. And then the third that came out was if you only need tickets, because there's some people who have timeshare or there are other locations that they stay in the area, if you purchase them a minimum of 4 day theme park ticket, you can get 2 additional days for free.
Wait, without
So
the room?
without the room, isn't that crazy? It's really nice to just get those 2 additional days at no extra cost. That is for tickets that are valid May 26th to September 15th. What was really cool, and this is again a benefit of booking with a good travel agent, like, MEI and Mousepad Travel,
Yes, of course.
we went, the first thing that we did when these dropped is we went through all of the bookings we already had on the books and applied these offers and these discounts. So one of the things that we do, which is really fun, is we kind of have a contest between the advisors of who's going to save somebody the most money. It's a lot of fun
Wow.
when we run these offers. So I saw one advisor that actually saved a client $1,600 off of it
No.
applying these offers. Yeah.
And they just hung out, didn't even think about it, and then they just got an email that was like, by the way, here's money back.
And that is the best thing about what we do for a living, is we get to make those phone calls and say, hey, guess what? We just saved you $1,600. What do you want to do with that? Do you want to upgrade? Do you want to take the money? What do you want to do? So I love my.
Oh my God. Oh, the MEI Mouse Fan Travel Lottery is back.
That's a great way to put it.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for this. I can't wait to hear what other deals you have in the next app
We got a
room.
few. Stand by.
All right, talk soon. Do you want to know how much I love Quince? Do you actually want to know how much I love Quince? I have two examples and I'm going to give you them both. First of all, when I see my Quince ad details come in, I'm like, oh baby, I can't wait to talk about this company. Why? Because I legitimately wear their stuff almost every day of my life. Right now, I'm wearing my purpley bike shorts. I wore them in my workout class this morning and was like, these look great. And I'll tell you, I've had them for over a year. I wear them constantly. I'm always washing them. They look fantastic. Quince is quality, and I just can't quit it. And the second thing, listen, I have been binging a different podcast, and they also work with Quince. They also have ads from Quince. And I don't fast forward because I'm like, yeah, tell me more. Tell me all about how these pieces are perfect for layering and mixing and building a wardrobe that lasts. Tell me about those soft Mongolian cashmere sweaters that feel like designer pieces without the markup. Quince really is that girl. And if you haven't shopped with Quince before, you gotta be doing it. They're everything they say they do, they do. They have perfectly cut denim for everyday wear. Their wardrobe essentials are crafted to last season after season. Or if you're me, workout class after workout class. Because while I've bought plenty of stuff there, sweaters, accessories, ooh, the workout stuff is what I always come back to. But that's not even what they're always talking about. They've got Italian wool coats that are beautifully tailored and soft to the touch. All of their items have quality through and through. The stitching, the fit, the fabrics, every piece is thoughtfully designed to be your new wardrobe staple. And like everything at Quince, each piece is made with premium materials in ethical, trusted factories that are priced far below what other luxury brands charge. Now, obviously, I love Quince. I wear them all the time, but I do need some new things. Like winter be wintering in LA, and I need some heavier layers, and I am looking nowhere else but Quince. Like, whatever I used to do 10 years ago when I'd like go to the mall when I needed something, that is simply not happening because I'm just going to Quince. I'm just going straight to Quince because I know they have it all. I just think they're great and I want to make sure you know it too. If you are thinking about refreshing your wardrobe at the start of this year, do it. Don't wait and do it with Quince. Go to quince.com/amusing for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. They're also now available in Canada, too. We love you, Canada, if you're listening from there. Hi. That's quince.com/amusing to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/amusing.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University. Set a course for change. Certified to operate by Chev.
Welcome back. I am recording this episode a little bit on video. We might post a little teeny tiny bit of video. And I am currently balancing my phone on top of a tripod, on top of a ceramic Tokyo Disney Resort popcorn box. And I just feel like there has never been a more apropos podcast setup for a woman. Like this is me. Of course, I am balancing my recording equipment on top of a popcorn box. I truly couldn't be anybody other than myself, even if I tried. Now, this week, we are talking about Disneyland Handcrafted. And you've probably been hearing about it a lot this week, mainly because Disney hosted a premiere on the Walt Disney Studios lot, which I was lucky enough to attend. And I'm going to tell you all about it in a moment. But first, we got to be talking about Leslie Iwerks. If you are not familiar with her game, she is a phenomenal director with a bombastic Disney lineage. Her grandfather is of Iwerks, who worked with Disney and had a hand in creating Mickey Mouse and Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, and created the multi-plane camera, which was essential to the development of future Disney films. Her father, Don Iwerks, brought iconic Disney visual effects and experiences to life, helping create things like the 360-degree circle vision camera, worked on Star Tours, worked on Captain EO. And Leslie is no Nepo baby, okay? Don't get it twisted. She masterfully tells the story of these iconic Disney institutions with a perspective that I believe no other filmmaker has given her background. She really does such good, intricate, detailed work, and we are so lucky to be the recipients of it. If you've seen the Imagineering story, you know what I'm talking about. Even this month, truly days ago, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal outlining the 3,000 or so employees that work in secret to keep Disney's magic alive. That was a paraphrase of the headline. The headline was so good. I was texting my other reporters about it, being like, oh, that was a good headline. Like, that story is still coming out right now in 2026. And here, Leslie peeled back the curtain on that so artfully to tell that story and so many others to wider audiences. And Disneyland Handcrafted is just that. It's not possibly what you're expecting. There are no talking heads. There are no bright, shiny graphic recreations of certain things. This is truly the chronological story of the year leading up to Disneyland's opening with rare archival footage. I keep calling both of these experiences the unprecedented labor of love, because that's what Leslie did with this film, but also what it took to create Disneyland as a whole. You got to keep in mind, and this is kind of the narrative coming out of the film, but we just need to hammer it in a little more. This thing was built in 1 year. They don't build theme parks in a year. They don't even really build land. They don't even really build attractions in 1 year. And we're not talking, which my brain kind of defaulted to. I was like, all right, like we had like the roads paved, like we were starting with concrete. Like a year isn't that cuckoo bananas. No. No. We are starting Disneyland Handcrafted at 12 months. There is a countdown. It is stressful in the best way. At 12 months, we're talking orange groves. We're talking tractor trailers, just like trying to flatten out land so much that one of them tips over. And they got footage of it. It's wild. If you've seen the poster image, which I feel like is one we kind of see often if you are a Disney fan and you tend to watch these kind of things. The one where like Walt's walking through an orange grove and he's like, ooh, I'm on the job site. I'm ready. That was within a year of the park opening. Within a year. It is absolutely mind-boggling what it took to create this theme park. And over the course of the documentary that Leslie made, you start to realize how absolutely unhinged and unbelievable it is that Disneyland even exists. Over 12 months, you will see this theme park we know and love take form, even when it shouldn't. Like, this park should not have opened on time. They intersperse audio clips from Imagineers who were there and just kind of giving like their experience. And there was a moment where Bob Gurr, who was sitting in the audience, by the way, Bob Gurr is on screen talking about it. And you're like, what is time? What is space? How am I watching this be made? Video footage from before Disneyland existed. And a man who is commenting on building it is sitting five rows away from me, hanging out at this party about to go eat a Mickey pretzel. It is so bizarre how in our lifetime, we'll see so many new advancements at Disney parks, but all of it started here, and all of it started with people who toiled to make it happen. Like, Disneyland, again, it is baffling that it is what it is. Watching this movie gave me such a greater appreciation for the park's existence as a whole, but also for the things that I never really gave any thought to. There is this one scene which, oh, this movie comes out January 22nd. I will be posting this online the moment it comes out. But there's this scene where they are building the Jungle Cruise, again, out of nothing. And there is a man in a scuba suit going to, I believe, set up a hippopotamus. Have you ever thought about how a hippopotamus got to be in the Jungle Cruise in 1955? I surely did not. I was just like, we're on a boat. There's a waterfall. Feels real. No, this all came out of nothing, out of thin air. And seeing that with your own eyes is absolutely mind-blowing. And as you watch the film, as the months progress, as the heat gets turned up, because, yeah, it does not seem like they're going to make their deadline. I genuinely, for a minute, thought at the end that Leslie was going to uncover that we've all been lied to about the opening day. It was actually 2 months later, and it was just a big old lie. But somehow, they made it happen. I mean, honestly, I still, not to be a conspiracy theorist from one that I made up in my own head, but I still kind of feel that a little. I'm still kind of like, really? Really they made it? Because it doesn't understand. Like, how was this place not absorbed into like a sinkhole? It was nothing, and then it was there. But over the months, over the course of this film, you start to see it slowly develop shape into the place we know. You'll be like, I think it was maybe 10 months or 11 months, you'd be like, oh, that's the berm. And there is this moment about halfway through, very early on in construction, where I was watching it and I had a visceral reaction because I went, oh, that's the entrance to Frontierland. It wasn't completely built. It wasn't completely done, but I was like, oh, I know that. I know that. And to like watch the birth of this theme park and how far things have come in the last 70 years, it will make you appreciate Disneyland in an entirely new way. It's also, the film is a testament to how hard people worked on this, both at the studio and the job site. They had footage of these artists like painting these little boats for Peter Pan. And then at the end, you see footage from opening day and you see little kids riding on Peter Pan. And it's like, we still do that. We still wait in line with our children so that they can experience Peter Pan for the first time. And here, 70 freaking years ago, people were experiencing it for the first time. Like, generations keep coming and going, but Disneyland stands the test of time. It's nuts. It's nuts. This documentary is nuts. You have to watch it. I can't stop yelling about it, even though my voice is still not all the way back. But my main takeaway and what I want you to experience from this film when you do get to watch it very, very soon and from this episode is that it's unfathomable that Disneyland was entirely made by hand. And this film kind of echoes that sentiment. I feel like this is the type of movie we don't usually get anymore. This isn't a double screen on your phone, texting, watching the movie. No, this is a put down your phone, get comfy, and watch a movie. It's slow paced. It's not at that quick pace that like TikTok has ruined our brains into accepting as the norm. It is truly art at its finest, and will make you appreciate Disneyland in a way that you may not have anticipated. Now, technically, you are kind of watching paint dry, but it is done in the most compelling way possible. Because this isn't just like footage that Leslie slapped together on her laptop and was like, cool, now you can see what it was like to build Disneyland. Peace. No, No, the process of making this, it would leave me catatonic. I cannot believe that they took on a project like this. I just want to say this. I just need you to like really pay attention to what I'm about to say. There was no audio. There was no audio for this footage. And now we have an entire movie because they painstakingly added audio to the entire thing. Every bolt being hammered into the TWA Moonliner in Tomorrowland, the sound is added. Every single moment of this film, they matched sounds to bring this story to life. And they did it at Skywalker Sound, by the way. So yeah, there is a lot of effort being put into this to make sure that we are able to even see and hear this story in this way for the first time. It's not lost on me how grateful I am after watching this for the people who worked so hard on Disneyland simply to make sure that I get to enjoy my goofy little life in these theme parks. Every single minute that you watch, these artists and craftsmen aren't just building buildings. They're creating future enduring happiness for generations of people to come, not just in California, but worldwide, because every Disney theme park that we have is because Disneyland successfully opened. Little did they know that they were changing the world, because this park, as we know it now, did just that. I left this premiere with such an appreciation for what these people do, how they did it on this timetable, and how Walt just never faltered. Money? Didn't have it. Got it done. Deadlines? Didn't matter. Got it done. There's a part in the documentary where they're like, we might have to delay it a few months. And they're like, nope. Forget it. Just keep manually pulling the Mark Twain riverboat. We're good. Only a madman could have done this. And I remain so impressed by Walt Disney. Last week, I spent an hour dreading an email. And I'm going to be very real with you. I still haven't sent it. An email, it would take me 4 minutes. It would be off my plate. I wouldn't have the weight of the world on my shoulders. I simply can't do it. And here, Walt's like, yeah, we can do it. We can do it in a year. In a year? Orange Groves to Disneyland, an iconic theme park. Yeah, we can do it. We're good. Hopping on TV, telling the American public like, oh, we're so excited for opening day when nothing is ready. Absolutely mind-blowing. And you will never look at the park the same way. I know I keep saying that, but like, that's truly the takeaway. The opening day story of Disneyland is something that Disneyland fans know, obviously. But having watched this, there's so much more than just choosing between plumbing and running water and like, oh, ladies' shoes were sticking in the asphalt. Like watching the run up to it and then it finally being pulled off. Disneyland is a story of artistry and labor and dedication and truly believing the impossible. And now that we can see this firsthand, we are all better for it. We will be speaking to Leslie Iwerks herself later in this episode. But first, I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the premiere because it was kind of an event. I got invited to this premiere, and to be honest, I thought they were using the word premiere loosely. I essentially viewed this as like, oh, it's going to be a screening of the new movie. Like, I bet Leslie will be there. I bet, like, you know, they'll invite a few people, et cetera, no big deal. I was wrong. I was very wrong because it was essentially like being at Disney prom. It was like being at Disney prom. I was there after hours with all my colleagues dressed nicely. All my friends and my coworkers were there. We were all like glammed up. And then instead of, you know, a premiere generally has like celebrities who come, the people who were filling those celebrity spots were Disney celebrities. Josh Gad, Susan Egan, every Imagineer you've ever wanted to see. They were all there, and it was so special to be in a room with them and be able to see this together for the first time. Now, I took my friend Stephanie, who is a major Disney fan. Her, I believe it's still her bio online, is charter member of D23. Like, that's how far back she goes with Disney. But we show up to the lot, and we get out of the car, and we pick up our, like, special guest lanyard when we check in, and we're like, this is amazing. And as we start walking, we start to realize it is maybe the coldest night in LA I've ever experienced. It was frigid. I don't know what was happening because I live in Los Angeles. Maybe it's like the studio lots proximity to like the mountains. I don't know how airflow works, but it was easily 25 to 30 degrees cooler there than it was in my house in West Hollywood. So we're walking up to the Walt Disney Studios lot and I'm already shivering, but the excitement ahead really kind of helps to negate the fact that I was freezing cold. We show up and there's a red carpet. Leslie is there. We've got Imagineers there. We've got like truly like so many people on the red carpet. I'm going to try to rattle them off. We had Pete Doctor. We had Bob Gurr, Martha Blanding. I saw from afar Robin Lopez. I saw Ashley Eckstein. I didn't even get to say hi to people because there was just so much going on. We all sort of milled about outside the theater, and then we head in where there was complimentary Disneyland popcorn, which you know that I love, and we all took our seats. And to just kind of relay how special of an evening this was, we sat down, my friend Stephanie and I. We sat next to my friend Drew Taylor, who you all know. I mean, he has a real job, but I like to just talk about him as the host of my favorite Mission Impossible podcast, Light the Fuse. But we turned around and we started talking to the people behind us. Lo and behold, it was, I believe, one of them was the head of story at Walt Disney Imagineering. And the other person, I'm blanking on their title, but they worked on Muppets Haunted Mansion. It was just like, oh, everybody here is absolutely integral to carrying on the vision of Disneyland. And it kind of blew my mind. Like, I didn't really clock how special of a room we were in until I looked around and was like, oh my gosh, this isn't a normal media event like I'm used to from work. Like, this is a big deal for the people who work here, who dedicate their lives and their time to this. And it was quite fascinating. The film ended and all of us were truly gagged. Like, I sometimes, you know, when there's a presentation and there's media and we like talk after, sometimes we're like, okay, yeah, no, like, yeah, no, it was great. We left this being like, how did they get it done? Those dudes were chain smoking, just hammering all day. Is that the key to efficiency? Like, we were truly out of our minds, perplexed by how this happened. But we didn't have much time at the beginning to really kind of mutually panic about how Walt got it done, because for part of this event, they opened up Walt Disney's office on the Burbank studio lot for us to visit. This is something that is very, very like closed off to the public unless you were attending as part of a D23 event. They had it open to everyone there. So my friends and I, Stephanie and Patrick and Sarah, we all went upstairs and got in line, and like, we're all dressed up for a premiere. So we got to go take photos in Walt's office in our little fancy outfits, which, when would that ever happen again? Apparently, that's because the Walt Disney Archives opened it up to us. So thank you to the Walt Disney Archives for such a gracious gesture. It really just helped kind of connect the dots between everything we were doing. And I couldn't help but look at I wouldn't call it a mural, the big old photo on the wall outside of his office, I guess, when Walt is presenting the Florida project, Walt Disney World. And it's like, oh, this dude didn't just do this once. Like, full we're building to Bob Iger, D23, peace sign, fingers out. This man made Disneyland. We just saw how hard it was. And he was like, cool, we're not stopping. Cool. You know, pick up those pencils, pick up those paints, because we're going to make the next one even bigger. It is insane. It is insane that Walt Disney made this many things, that this one man spearheaded so many things that inform our culture to this day, 70 years later. I can't believe it. Like, I know it's like, it all started with a mouse, but like, oh my God, it did. And it's wild that so many people supported that vision, supported that dream, and now we have things that I bet he couldn't even imagine we would have. The reception was lovely. They had like Disneyland foods, which was fun. They had Mickey pretzels, they had churros, they had popcorn, more popcorn. And it was all like outside on the lot. Mickey Mouse was there. And not to be like, ugh, but like Mickey Mouse was there and there was no line. There was no line, which is an ideal experience. I also had a little haha moment because I ran into Brett Iwin, who also guest of the pod. This is what I mean. There's so many like guests of the podcast there. I ran into Brett Iwin and we were talking and my friends were taking a photo with Mickey. And I looked at him and was like, because I was talking to him and he's like, do you want to go take a photo? I was like, no, I'll take one later. And we were chatting and they were taking the photo. And I'm like, we're both getting our own Mickey Mouse experiences. And it was lovely. Brett also told me that like, a significant amount of you listened to that episode with us. And whenever you see him, you tell him how much you loved it, which was so flattering to hear from him. And I told him firsthand, like, literally anytime he wants to come on the podcast, I will clear my schedule because that was such a fun episode. Oh my gosh, his background? Wild. I'm just so fascinated by Brett and all of his many, many talents. The fact that that dude basically has like four different careers worth of skills, I can never get over it. I ran into Daniel Zhu, who you may remember from our many Duffy podcasts. Daniel is now working on Disneyland Resort, and I've seen him a few times since he moved over to that project. And he just really, I can see like the optimism and excitement in his eyes, not to project anything onto him, but it seems like he's really excited for the next few years at Disneyland Resort. And that in turn gives me so much faith and so much excitement for what we may see at my home park in the near future. It was just a lovely night. We hung out. I ran into the For Your Amusement guys. Like, it was really, a lot of times when I see my colleagues, we are working. Like, we're not that this wasn't work, but we're actively working. Like, we are exploring a new experience. We are at, say, Epic Universe was like one of the biggest things this year. We were all there, but we have so much to do. We have so many stories to tell. We have so much content to capture. Same with any Disney Cruise Line event. Like, with the Disney Destiny, we were there, but there was so much to do. There was so many things we had to explore. There was about and I'm sure I mentioned this in the podcast, there was maybe like a 30-ish minute break on the beach where we all got to hang out. And that was our break because we were so busy and doing other things. Now, I'm not complaining. That's the job. And I love my job. I actually prefer it to visiting places casually because I love to tell stories and I love to get information and I love to share it. But it was just so nice to have this night where we're like, we just hang and get to gab about the wild movie we just saw and how crazy it is that Disneyland exists. It was just really nice to do that together collectively at the lot, at a place that Walt was at, and really just see it through. It was a lovely night. I'm so grateful I got to go. I have been to one other, I guess it was the first premiere I've been to for a work purpose. I've been to one other premiere, but that's just because Ben got invited and I begged him to take me. It was the Cars 3 premiere, which was on my birthday. I think it was my 30th birthday. I don't know if that's how math maths, but that was a sick premiere. It was in Anaheim. And we went to the premiere because he had an artist who did a song in the soundtrack. And then the party was in Cars Land. And I remember we were on the Radiator Springs Racers vehicles behind Johnny Knoxville. And it was just like, oh my God. Like, if Johnny Knoxville is screaming at this, like, I don't want to say the name of what Johnny Knoxville is known for because this podcast is clean. But, you know, it was pretty wild. We did Radiator Springs Racers about 4,000 times. And I have never been on that many times since. And it was bliss. It was bliss. But this one was also so special. It was so special. I'm so grateful to have been included and to have gone. And I just want to emphasize Disneyland Handcrafted is something you got to sit down and plan to watch. It is so special. And it will really kind of change your brain chemistry as a Disney fan. It is out January 22nd. I hope you enjoy. And as a little treat, I do have a little conversation I had with Leslie Iwerks, which I hope you enjoy. So stick around. We'll have that for you right after this break. Leslie, welcome to Very Amusing.
Thank you.
I'd love to talk to you about kind of the process of turning some of this footage into the final product that is Disneyland Handcrafted. How many reels did you find? How much footage was there? Were they filming everything or were they just kind of capturing a little bit day to day? What exactly did you sift through to get to this final product?
So, you know, lots of hours that we got, hundreds of, I mean, probably a couple hundred hours, you know, originally from the just not just Disneyland pre-opening, but post Disneyland and Walt Disney World, and all this was kind of brought in for the Imagineering story research that we did, and then we started looking at all this stuff that was like just construction, right? And what could be told from the construction phase and make it interesting, because just looking at construction, I'm sure, is boring for most people. But the reality is there's a whole other story to this construction footage. It's the pressure, the fact that Walt was promoting it on his TV show to millions of people every week and for a year or whatever it was. And ultimately, you know, promising things that hadn't even happened yet. And I'm not even sure if they could pull it off. And so there was this pressure cooker time capsule that we really wanted to showcase and to, you know, make audiences feel and understand this is what went into building this place we all know and love so much. But there was a whole other story to it. And that was kind of, you know, what we leaned into.
I mean, I don't want to project on you, but like, was the palpable stress ever stressful to you? Like being in this environment where you're like, they're not going to be this deadline. Like, did you ever take that home with you and be like, it happened. Disneyland exists. We're fine.
Yeah. It's tricky because, you know, you see this footage in different reels and you see a scene, you know, and you see a little shot here. And we had to forensically sort of take all these disparate shots and organize them across a year and across location. And so it was like an archaeological dig trying to just find things, you know, and they were kind of shot with, you know, almost like outtakes, you know, like a little 10-minute, 5-minute shot here one day. And then that same camera would be used again 3 days later somewhere on the other side of the park, but they wouldn't have slates. And so you're trying to figure out, okay, well, where is this now? And what time frame was it? And so there was a lot of, you know, trying to figure it out phase for us. But there was also the fact that we had the great brain trust that I put together, you know, of Don Hahn and Tony Baxter and Tim O'Day and Tom Morris and, you know, Pete Docter and Jonas Rivera and Becky Klein and the whole archives team, you know, just really great support to make sure this was accurate. And so that's, you know, that's kind of how we started to craft it. And then it became finding audio sound bites and interviews that talked about this as first person points of view of people that were there on the ground and what was really going on emotionally at that time, not just what happened. Like we can read about how Disneyland was constructed, you know, certain things or whatever, like the how, but I really wanted to focus on the why and why it mattered and the, you know, just the achievement of it, the obstacles, because I think that's what everybody felt was a lot of pressure. And I can't imagine building this entire park, having it exposed to the entire world, everyone already buying tickets, already excited about it. And if you don't open that opening day or if you delay, it's going to cost, you know, probably millions more dollars, you know. So, I mean, that's intense pressure when you're promoting something on TV and it's another world in reality. So that was the dichotomy we aimed to craft together.
Oh, my gosh. It's so fascinating that this park has been open for 70 years and there is still such a rich story here that we are about to watch about the park's origins.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the way in which we put it together. I think, you know, you can see some of this footage in different pieces and parts of other documentaries, but I think the way in which we just took the raw footage and made it just sat in it, you know, and tried to really tell it from a human point of view, from the people that were there, without cutting away to sound bites, cutting away to talking heads, without cutting away to photographs. I mean, trust me, I had moments where I'm like, oh, I'd love to see a shot of this one person who's speaking because I got a great shot of like Ruth Shellhorn or something, you know, to see them in photographs is cool. And maybe we'll do another version of that just for my own edification. But I really wanted to honor these cameramen who were, you know, they had experience working on the True Life Adventures. And so now here they were they're out in the desert filming, you know, rodents and lizards. And then now they're in the theme park filming construction workers doing all this amazing work and having fun with it like they did with the True Life Adventures. I mean, they did all these gag reels with time lapse and, you know, construction crane picking an orange from a tree and, you know, and handing it to a lady down on the ground, you know, waiting for it. And like just cute little gags that I think when we put those together, you see the fun that they had.
And even amidst all of the stress.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think the craziness too was what came out for us, you know, it was just fun and crazy at the same time.
I know you spoke of that dichotomy between Walt publicly announcing this park and the park itself kind of rapidly trying to get built. Was there any bit of footage or any segment within Disneyland Handcrafted that stood out to you as like, oh my God, like that is just night and day between the two versions of what was happening and what was being presented?
I mean, I think it's just the construction itself was amazing and daunting, you know, just how they did it, climbing up these huge poles and, you know, swinging off of a crane and, you know, just amazing footage that you don't really see. And I think that when you look at like just the Wild West nature of how things were made back in those days compared to now, it's really fascinating. And I think it gives you a renewed appreciation for another era, another time when things were very different.
Yeah. I love that you chose to use the word handcrafted in the title of this film, because I think at this point, we always think of Disneyland as this behemoth, as something that's always been there, but it really was created by artisans and craftsmen, and it's stood the test of time.
Yeah.
In your process of making this, can you at all speak to the artistry that now people will be able to see up close and when it was created?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that what's fun is the cameraman shot so many tight shots of hands and people working on different things. And so that's really where that name came from, which is like, you don't really think about it. But now we've got 3D printers, you know, we've got scanners, we've got AI, we've got every tool to basically will into existence without having to even use our hands to draw it or whatever, or write it. So I think this taps into another era where things were more innocent and real. And I think there's this nostalgic feeling that I get anyway, looking back on the way they did it and knowing that that became the DNA or the blueprint of not only Disneyland, but everything that has come from Disneyland, every other park, every cruise ship, every hotel. It was the hospitality. It was the thoughtfulness of the design, and it was the elegance and the details that Walt really pushed hard for. And even amidst great odds and expense, he said, this is the way it's got to be. This is the only way it's going to be different from everything else that exists. And he knew in his heart of heart, that's what it needed. And I think a lot of people fell in line behind him and appreciated that desire to make it elevated, an elevated experience.
Yeah, he was right. He was right. It really worked out. Thank you so much. I'm just so excited about this. I'm so excited it's coming out this month. Is there anything else that someone who is considering watching this should know before they go into viewing it?
I mean, I think it's not just a story about Disneyland, you know, a story about Disneyland. It's a great business story, I think. And it's a great story of innovation and seizing opportunity and willing it into fruition, into existence. And so to me, I think it's an inspirational story of what we as humans can do if we really set our mind to it, and what we can give back to the world if we put our mind to it and we put our money towards it, and we do it because it's needed in the world. And that's what Walt did. He put this thing in the world because he felt it was needed, and it was, and it still is.
Hi, a quick little Churros call preview. We got more calls in 1 week than I think we have ever gotten before from the Bucket List 2026 episode. I am going to try to find a way to compile all the suggestions that everyone sent in for all of the different regions and places, which I'm so grateful for. I'm only going to play one call this week, but please know if you called and your call is not played, I am dissecting all of the information you sent. So thank you. Maybe I'll put together like a little road trip guide for us. Ah! Ooh, like a little map, an amusement palooza map. Oh, not amusement palooza. I'm sorry. Forgot where I am. A very amusing map would be cool. That would be cool. Okay, I'm going to ruminate. But anyway, on to Churro's calls. And thank you to everyone who called.
Hey, Carly. My name's Sarah. I live in San Diego. I just listened to your bucket list for 2026, and I had to call to talk about your impending trip to Legoland, not just because Pearl is the perfect age. It's also because if you're going to bother to drive 2.5 hours to Carlsbad, you have to keep coming south to San Diego for a couple of reasons. I know you sailed out of the port here on the Wonder. I don't know whether you fit in the Tayo Balboa Park when you came, and there's a reason I asked this is because there are some treasures in Balboa Park that you should add to your bucket list. So first, there's the Marie Hitchcock Puppet Theater. I know I don't really have to convince you to visit a puppet theater, and I don't know if you've ever been to this one, but they claim that they're like the longest continually running puppet theater in North America, and I think you need to come and bring Pearl. It may not be the same caliber as Bob Baker. I can't make any promises, but I really think it's worth at least checking out. And then there's the San Diego Model Railroad Museum. There are like 20 museums total in Balboa Park, but I promise that this one is a hidden gem. Nobody knows about it. It's in the basement of one of the park buildings, and it's this magical place filled with model trains and these teeny tiny, really elaborate sets with little people and little cars and little buildings. And there's people who are members of the museum, and they sit in the middle of the sets and they tinker and they build and they drive the little trains around. I promise I'm not doing this place justice. You just have to see it for yourself. And then right near the train museum, there is the San Diego Junior Theater. It's the oldest educational youth theater program in the country. I will say, I have a personal stake in this one. My 10-year-old is a theater kid. I spend an inordinate amount of time in and around this place. But it is a magical place to bring small children for a live theater experience where no one cares if they wiggle or get up and walk up and down the aisle, or you just go outside and you come back in. And the biggest reason I mention this is that I know you have a Frozen-obsessed kid, and I also know how much you love Shrek, and I don't know when you're coming, but the kids are putting on Frozen Jr. over the next 2 weekends in January, and then they're doing the full version of Shrek the Musical starting the weekend of April 24th for 3 weeks. So I definitely think if you're fighting terrible traffic to drive all the way through Orange County to Carlsbad, just keep coming south. There is so much great stuff here for kids to do. So that's all I've got. I hope you'll add this to your bucket list. Thank you for letting me cross something off of my bucket list, because I'm taking my first solo trip all the way across the country to Disney World in less than a month because I'm coming to Musapalooza. So I'll see you there. Thanks so much. Bye.
Hi, Sarah. Okay, the reason I needed to play this call immediately on this podcast is because, as I mentioned on the Bucket List 2026 episode, in case you have not listened to it yet, I was probably going to go to Legoland in January. That is not happening because it's too tricky with like child. Basically, I'd have to bring Pearl, but it's a work event and it's like a construction site and it's just not, it's not feasible. So I was hoping to go in March, but now also like I shouldn't be like talking about this on Maine. I always just feel like I'm on the phone talking to a friend, but that's what the podcast is. So basically I spontaneously booked a cruise out of San Diego in March. So I don't know if that's going to be instead of Legoland or if I'm going to feel very brave and make it a longer trip and add Legoland. But now you're telling me all this sick San Diego stuff where I'm like, do I need to make this a week long trip? I don't know if my child can, I'm going alone with my child. I don't know if I can handle this I can handle like this much stuff, because like with kids, they get overstimulated and it's like a little too much. And I know we're gonna be doing way too much on the cruise, but oh my Lord, this railroad museum, like, oh my God. I need to see this with my eyes. This puppet theater. There's so much to do in San Diego, and not just the best chocolate chip cookie I've ever had, which I will be getting on the way back home. I need to spend so much more time there. I need to go to Legoland. I know I said this on the episode. I have heard 100% like Rotten Tomatoes, 100% critic and fan reviews positive for Legoland California. Like the word of mouth coming out of Legoland California is like what Disneyland hoped for in those first few years. And they were like, tell everyone it's great. Like I cannot believe it. I need to go. I need to do this. And now your call alone has convinced me that I am at a minimum, when we get off the ship, I'm going to this museum. I'm not going straight home. I got to go to this museum. I got to check out this puppet theater. I don't know if they have like morning or daytime shows, but yeah, you're right. San Diego like rocks. I haven't spent much time there. Oh my God, a puppet theater. I need to spend way more time there. Wow. And there's a zoo. Okay. I mean, that's where it is, right? Yeah, that's where the big zoo is. Yeah. Am I imagining that? No, I'm not imagining that. I feel like I fed giraffes there. Why was I there? I don't know. Oh, no. A Galapagos tortoise died. Grandma giant. Oh, rest peacefully. Thank you. I needed a push to be like, yo, San Diego's cool. And now I'm going to be there and I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm going to at least do one thing that you mentioned. I would make time to see Frozen Jr. if I wasn't, listen, low key booking a cruise to see Frozen, because there's no Frozen in the Hyperion anymore. And it is my bone to pick with life. But I thank you. Thank you for the San Diego call. Thank you to everyone who called about different locations. I love that we love these fun things. I mean, what is the point of life if not to have fun? You know, I don't want to sit somewhere boring and do boring things. I love to do this. I love to chase a little adventure high. And I'm so grateful for this. Thank you for your call. Hopefully I'll see you in San Diego. Oh my God, the train museum. Welcome back, Becky.
I'm back with more. You will not believe. You don't have to just go to Disney World to get some savings on some incredible vacation deals. One of them is Adventures by Disney. They just offered a save up to $500 per person on select 2026 and 2027, either river cruises or land as well. So
that's big money. Thought
it must be booked by March 12th, and it is valid on select departures from April 1st to December 19th, 2027.
Ooh, we're talking river cruise holiday market window.
You have no idea. That's my favorite thing ever is a river cruise in the Christmas markets. Have you ever done one?
I have done one. I did it with Adventures by Disney, and it was mind-blowing. It was so fun.
Two other things that are available right now, and they're both MEI Travel exclusive, so they're only available through us. Ooh. One of them is if you book a Royal Caribbean cruise for departures February 1st to September 30th, deposited by January 31st, you get a free soda package for two when you book a balcony or suite. Ooh. So that's a great add-on because their beverage packages are additional cost, and this would be free to you. So I love that.
Nice.
My other one is if you like Norwegian, a lot of people like NCL, Norwegian Cruise Lines, we have an exclusive of up to $200 onboard credit per stateroom if you book a balcony or above on select 2026 sailing. That is for a booking window through January 15th versus sailings May. Oh, no, that is for 2026 sailing. So there's a lot of those offers out there, too. Like I said, I could sit here and go on for probably another 30 minutes of everything that's out there. I have seen deals to Hawaii. I've seen deals on Princess Cruise Lines, Viking Cruise Lines. Tons of different competitors out there are all vying for the vacation dollar, and they're doing it by offering these great savings.
Wow. And what I love about not just working with your company, but also planning my trips. I just booked a cruise with you guys. I love just sending an email and being like, what's the pricing for this date or this date? And then just, I don't have to do research. I don't have to look through all this. You guys just do it. And it's for free. And it's incredible.
You don't have to touch a keyboard. If you don't want to, you don't have to touch a computer. You don't have to get on the internet. You can just say, hey, I did
that. That's what I did.
And we can take care of you.
Thank you for coming on this special wave season 2026. And I can't wait to hear what next month has in store. Oh my gosh. And I get to see you next month.
I know. I'm so excited for this. I can't wait.
I'm so excited too. Thank you so much, Becky. That's our show! Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you to Leslie Iwerks and everyone at Disney who gave me access to this wonderful documentary and let me sneak with her. It was wonderful. I don't usually cover films and movies, but obviously this is in, I almost said wormhole. This is in my wheelhouse, different word, and it's just so nice to be able to encourage people to watch this documentary because truly, wow! Wow, I'm gobsmacked. I am unbelievably amazed. You can catch Disneyland Handcrafted on Disney Plus starting January 22nd, and you absolutely should. You should, trust me, like, check it out. You will, it's, I really like that. So I know people were talking about that TV show Pluribus in this way, but I really like that there is programming that is coming out where it's like, girly, put TikTok down, sit down, lock in, watch the screen, single screen, and really just like take an hour for yourself to absorb everything that's happening. I love that this program exists like that, and I highly recommend viewing it that way. You can rate, review, and follow us on Apple Podcasts and rate and follow us on Spotify. You can give us a call at 747-CHURROS. I love your calls. I love having this phone line. And again, I think I'm just going to say it every week now. Let us be your safe space to use a phone. I want to get more comfortable on the phone. I had to make a call yesterday and I was like, woo, about it. And it ended up being lovely. And the person I was like calling, like basically get a gift certificate for my dad, called lovely. We giggled, we chatted. Like, it was so nice. It was so nice. So I want to encourage you to get used to picking up the phone. Call me. It is a safe space for you to use the phone. And that is what I want the Churros Hotline to be for you. If you're planning a trip, if you made it to this point in the episode, you already know what I'm going to say. Reach out to MEI Mouse Fan Travel. I booked a cruise over email, and I'm gonna beat that drum for a long time. I booked a cruise over email. If I didn't have a few follow-up questions, and if I didn't want to change my credit card, I could have booked it in one email with my travel agent at MEI Mouse Fan Travel. I love them. I can't recommend them enough. And as a Disney person, like, you're still gonna tinker on the back end. Like, I'm still on the website now being like, do I want nursery hours here or here? But they can do everything. They can do everything. And I love that they really meet you where you are. Like, if you need a ton of help, they'll help you. If you don't need a ton of help and you want to book it yourself, they have that self-booking engine that Becky talked about. They really have it all, and I adore them, and they are making Amusapalooza happen. I am so grateful to them, and I love them. So if you are booking a trip, reach out to them, get quotes, use them. They are free to use, and they are fantastic. We love travel agents here at Very Amusing. Head to mousefantravel.com/amusing for all of your Disney Cruise Line, Disney Parks, Universal, travel, all of it, any of those needs. Follow me at Carly Wiesel across the internet. I'm trying to be better about posting videos, even though I do have about 400 in my phone I've never posted and have been meaning to. So, still behind in the Alaska cruise coverage, and that was in June, so yikes. You can join the Foamly at facebook.com/group/CarlyWiesel and subscribe to my Instagram, 99 cents a month. I am posting more and more every day. I love it. It's a really nice little clubhouse and it's a great time. Check that out at Carly Wiesel on my Instagram, 99 cents. And thanks so much for listening. See you real soon. And if you keep hearing this, I wore too many rings to record this today, and I keep clapping my hands just because I'm happy to be here, so I apologize. Okay, see you real soon. Okay, bye.
Hi, honey, it's Mom. Oh, this is a fun one. So you were on Scott Patterson's podcast. It is called I Am All In ... Again. Oh, my God, this is so exciting. So I'm an original. I watched Gilmore Girls when you were just a little kid. This is so exciting. He's so cute. That's Scott Patterson. Luke, love him. Okay, that is so much fun. But Musapalooza is coming, and I'm very excited. It's getting closer, and it's so fun. Okay, I'll let that go for now because we have so much to talk about with your bucket list. Oh, my God. You have a bucket list that is so funny to me. But fun to make bricks. You're so cute, honey. Your bucket list, Dolly World, Miniature Museum, the puppetry with the Muppets, the wall drug, the Milwaukee Museum, the biggest Bass Pro Shop so you could sleep in a pyramid building and sleep in the governor's suite, and Legoland. You are the cutest thing ever. So when you were little, Dad made sure that Sundays were museums and aquarium days. Sundays, we were forced, it was like a forced march, and we had to explore. We would lay around on Saturdays, we watched cartoons, play with your toys, but Sundays were educational days. And it hit me that everywhere we've traveled together, maybe all those museums and all those fun, quirky places we went to, made you love going to museums and exploring new places everywhere. So that's why you and I went to every circus thing, fun thing, whimsical thing, but every museum in town wherever we were. We always did that together. I do love going with you. I do things that I would never do, and I love that. That's why you are my bucket list, Carly. Anytime, anywhere with you is the greatest. And maybe one day, possibly Tokyo Disney with you. And when you go to Milwaukee from your bucket list, I'm an hour away, so I will definitely see you, so that'll be great. I love you so much. This was so much fun, and I love you, Pearl. Bye-bye.